The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Kennedy Hewitt live in Studio West on this President's Day. Have a great President's Day. President Biden is in Kyiv, Ukraine, making a surprise visit with President Zelensky on the anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that has been turned back, in which the United States has assisted Ukraine in turning it back. Headline, Washington Post, Biden makes surprise trip to Ukraine ahead of Russian invasion anniversary. This is headline in the Wall Street Journal. President Biden visits Ukraine for first time since Russia's invasion. And then the New York Times, President Biden visits Kyiv, Ukraine's besieged capital. There's no New York Times reporter with President Biden in Kyiv. There is, however, a couple of Washington Post reporters there. So I go to their story. President Biden made a dramatic unannounced visit to Kyiv on Monday in a display of strong American support for Ukraine just 4 days before the anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion. The high-risk visit to a Ukrainian capital that has been under threat of missile attack signals continued commitment from the United States, the largest financial and military backer of Ukraine's efforts to repel Russian invaders from its territory. Biden was spotted outside St. Michael's Golden Dome Monastery with Ukrainian President Zelensky. The Ukrainian capital was in a security lockdown with car traffic halted, even pedestrians blocked from certain streets. Shortly afterwards, an air raid siren went off in the city. It's very dramatic. It may be the most memorable moment of the Biden presidency to date. And I applaud the president for doing this. Supermajorities of Americans support our support for Ukraine. I am among them. It is the front line in the world division between China, Russia, Iran, and the free world, with a bunch of people on the sidelines, including every other day, Germany. But the West supports Ukraine, and every Russian tank, missile, plane shot down, every Russian soldier killed is one more blow to that axis of evil in the 21st century. And President Bush, in those dire days after and months after 9/11, called the axis of evil Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Well, this is axis of evil 2.0, and it's much stronger, China, Russia, Iran. My phone number is 1-800-520-1234. On this President's Day, I'll run through the news, but I'd like to know what you think of President Biden in Ukraine. I am 100% in favor of it. I'll be joined later by Selena Zito, by Josh Kroshauer, by Leland Vittert of News Nation. We're just very thrilled that all of the plans came together. The president took a secret train from Poland to Kyiv. I'm sure he's going to be out of there very quickly. It's going to really make Putin have an aneurysm. And it's the kind of thing that Joe Biden can do because it doesn't involve giving a speech or wrestling with a teleprompter. He just has to walk around with Zelensky, and the Ukrainians will take heart. The capital that was supposed to be seized in a week is still standing a year later, and indeed, Russia's losses have been extraordinary. Poland called for NATO security guarantees to a post-war Ukraine. Now, Poland matters a lot to us. It's our strongest, most able ally on the border of the Soviet Union, although I am certainly hoping that Finland and Sweden join NATO, and then Finland will be like Poland, the frontline ally that has the most to risk and the most to offer in terms of forward defense. More on that in a moment. Dave Zbigniew is a friend of mine in Cleveland, and since it's President's Day, I want to read you an email he sent to me yesterday. Hugh, I've met President Carter and spoken with him and continue to be an active contributor to his charity. One needs to search far and wide to find a more compassionate, hardworking, knowledgeable, and kind person. The hands-on building work he championed, the work with Guinea worm disease, and the active charitable leadership he provided to many causes is very impressive. His recovery from brain cancer years ago is amazing. Most importantly, his personal negotiations and relentless pursuit of a peace treaty between Egypt and Israel stands alone as one of the greatest achievements in diplomacy over the past 50 years. Yes, he was a poor president, surrounded by the inept, and the press used Billy as their pinata daily. One of the many rebound presidents we have elected who struggled mightily in office and then did well in post-presidency years. All Americans should pause and pay their respects to the man Jimmy Carter and his achievements. I trust you can help inform your audience in these contentious times as to the man and the humanitarian he is and the good he did for so many, many people worldwide. Dave Zavagno. Dave is 100% correct. I had the honor of interviewing former President Carter on a book tour when he made to L.A. in 1994 when I was hosting the Nightly News and Public Affairs show there for PBS, Life and Times, which ran for a decade. And he was gentle. He was wonderful. He was terrific. In the post-presidency years, he did what HW and W have done, which is raise money for a lot of people, do a lot of good things for a lot of people, spend time with your family, don't bag. Now, he's made some missteps in his post, but not perfect. He's gone partisan. He's like his human rights policy during 77 to 81 when he was president, just occasional face plants. But the man is a legend for helping the homeless, building houses, Habitat for Humanity. He's a good man. And I salute him and pray for him and for his family as he enters hospice care this President's Day. Speaking of this President's Day, big New York Times piece, which I'll discuss in the Grand Old Pod later. The Grand Old Pod will be available at the Universe. I hope you are a subscriber to Universe. 5 days a week, we give you exclusive content on there. And today's President's Day show is a good one. And I encourage you to tune into it. It will be about President Biden in Ukraine and about Nikki Haley on the Sunday shows yesterday and Kamala Harris sitting down in the safe space for all Democrats. The only place they can go anymore, MSNBC. New York Times, Biden drawing up a 2024 playbook that looks a lot like the 2020 playbook. I'll talk about that in the Grand Old Pod. Nikki Haley walks treacherous road for GOP women. How absurd. I'll talk about that in the Grand Old Pod. Let's go to the news over the weekend. My phone number, by the way, is 1-800-520-1234. If you have a comment on President Biden being in Ukraine, 1-800-520-1234. Now, when President Bush went to Iraq in 2003 to serve Thanksgiving to the troops, that was bold. That was a war zone. That was bold. This is the same thing. Subsequent trips by President Bush and President Obama and President Biden have not been the same thing. He had better idea of what was going on. But W showing up in Baghdad and Biden showing up in Kyiv, they're just what presidents do. And yes, it's dangerous. Winston Churchill used to go to the top of number 10 when the bombs fell in Great Britain during the Blitz. And so physical courage is part of the deal. And I salute the president. Blinken and China's top diplomat. He's their foreign minister, Wang Yi, met on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. And the Chinese immediately announced it and said, we asked for the meeting and we looked weak again. Biden has tense meeting with Chinese officials amid spy balloon furor. Tense meeting means that Wang Yi yelled at Blinken again like he did in Alaska. U.S. warns China not to supply lethal aid to Russia. Not sure they care what this administration said. They've judged them, and they've judged them weak. In satellite images and video, hidden clues about an Iranian Air Force upgrade. Turns out the Iranians are going to buy from Russia the Su-35, their most advanced fighter plane. Look, it's Iran, it's China, Russia, Iran against the world. I do want to bring you up to speed on Sweden warning NATO against decoupling its NATO bid from Finland. Erdogan needs gazillions of dollars to rebuild his country. We were happy to help him do that, and we're happy to help other countries rebuild. But Erdogan has to stop screwing NATO. NATO is about NATO, not about Turkey's problems with its domestic issues. There are other stories out there, including the butchering of Ronald Dahl's books by a woke elite. Wokeism has descended into publishing. But let me begin in New York with Jason. Good morning, Jason. What say you?
Morning, Hugh.
Happy President's Day.
Oh, thank you very much. You too as well.
Thank you.
I agree that it's a bold move for him to be over in Ukraine. As far as being the right idea, that's a 50-50. I'm not
I'm a big supporter of the war. Why do you say 50-50? You got a minute.
All right. I'm 20 years military. I'm retired now.
Well, thank you for your years.
Them not being part of NATO, we're sticking our feet into dangerous territory. this country is not in a great shape to go into a war. Our military is not ready for it. So by jumping in there, that could get us into a war that we're not ready for.
Well, that's a good caution. No American troops are there. Special forces may be going there. And if Putin wants to start a war, he will start it, not us. And if he starts a war by engaging any of the NATO countries and invoking Article 5, we have to fight it. And it's going to be between two nuclear powers to make the Cuban Missile Crisis look like a dance. But I appreciate the sentiment. And Jason, thank you especially for 20 years in uniform. Much appreciated. It's President's Day. Call me about President Biden in Kyiv, 1-800-520-1234. Good morning, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt live on the West Coast. President Biden is in Kyiv, Ukraine. I want to remind everyone, yesterday's political items. I read two newsletters every day, news items by John Ellis and political items from John Ellis. Substack subscriptions. I like the product so much I actually invested in it because it's real news. It's just the summary of the news. Yesterday, John circulated a summary of about a half dozen polls from various places. And the one that stuck in my mind, I went and found it and just put it out on Twitter. If you're not following me on Twitter, I wish you would. I do mostly straight news plus the Browns, Guardians, Cavs, and the Ohio State University Buckeyes. Yesterday, Ellis, political items. Nearly 1 year into the war between Russia and Ukraine, American support for Ukraine holds steady. A stable 65% of U.S. adults prefer that the United States support Ukraine in reclaiming its territory, even if that results in a prolonged conflict. Meanwhile, 31% continue to say they would rather see the U.S. work to end the war quickly, even if this allows Russia to keep the territory that it has occupied in Ukraine. I am with the 65% and believe that, as President Reagan did with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan throughout the 80s, we ought to be doing with Ukraine whatever they need. Give them the tools. They'll finish the job. People agree and disagree. Richard in South Carolina. Good morning, Richard. You've been waiting the longest. Let's start with you. How are you? Happy President's Day.
Happy President's Day. I agree with you, Hugh. I'm not a supporter of Biden, but I'm glad he's there. And we should never forget that in the early 90s, at the end of the Cold War, Ukraine gave up their nuclear weapons to the United States, and which kept them out of the hands of terrorists. And we should do everything we can to support that country, because I tell you, they're fighting that war. And if we're not careful and we don't support them, we'll probably all be in a big war soon. So I certainly am happy that Biden went there to support Ukraine at the one-year anniversary.
I think it's the strongest moment of his presidency.
I agree.
And it's not a very, there aren't many of those to pick from, but you're absolutely right. The tip of the sword right now in the war of freedom against totalitarianism is on the front line in Ukraine, where free people are fighting against the axis that is China, Russia, Iran, and not China particularly, but the Chinese Communist Party, not Russia, but Putin and his gang, and not the Iranian people, but the mullahs at the center of it. Richard, thank you. Let's go to Chicago and Gary. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. I don't think this has anything to do with Ukraine and their position with NATO. This is totally regarding Russia and stopping their aggression. And I wish the administration would see that this is an opportunity to possibly shut down Russia for good without expending one American soldier if they would just give the Ukrainians everything they needed. And I think it is good to see Biden go to Ukraine.
I think it's the finest moment of his presidency on President's Day.
Yeah, I just wish they would see the opportunity to possibly shut down Russia for good.
Yeah, or actually convert it to a modern European nation. I was reading a long story on Putin yesterday, and they're reverting to complete Stalinist thuggery, and he thinks he's a czar. And I just put this on my Twitter feed. AP just reported President Biden announced another $500 million in aid, which is great, but no more advanced weaponry, no new advanced rep. They need fighters that they can fly. We've got them.
Totally agree.
We've got them. Our NATO allies have them, and the Pentagon, under President Biden's orders, will not send them. So it's like a fight with one hand behind your back. I do not understand it, but I applaud him going, and it will certainly have a great impact. Thank you, Gary, for listening in Chicago this morning. Harry in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Harry. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. After 20 years in Afghanistan and then the surrender, leaving behind $80+ billion of our weapons, and you think we should be giving F-16s to Ukraine, who's going to fly them? Who's going to maintain them?
Oh, I mean, they got that. If they can't fly them, you don't give them, but it's not the world. They've got already fighter pilots who are flying advanced planes. They're just not as good as the F-16. And that we're not, I'm not saying the F-22 and technology that can be lost. And I don't think it in any way obscures that. I don't know how much we left in Afghanistan, but it was a lot. And we left a lot of blood and treasure there. And mostly it's the blood that bothers me. And we left a lot of allies there. And that's why Putin, I think, invaded Ukraine, is because he saw our reaction in Afghanistan. But Harry, the two aren't connected, except this is an American display of strength. And Afghanistan was the worst display of collapse since Vietnam.
We just spent $1.2 million shooting down three weather balloons.
We don't know that. Harry, we don't know that. You don't know that. I don't know that. We don't know what they were. One of them is at the bottom of Lake Huron. And it was a terrible execution of an important strategy. And we let the Chinese spy machine coast over the United States and send all the data back to the CCP. Then we shot it down. And that was stupid. Turns out we shot at it in Montana and couldn't bring it down. So there's a question about the Pentagon's competence here as well. But this is, when you have a $31 trillion debt, we're not talking about real money here. You want to fix the real money problem, you got to fix entitlements. You want to fix entitlements, it's going to have to be bipartisan and a virgin birth. But it's got nothing to do with supporting Ukraine. The cost of a war would be a lot more if he engages Poland or any of the NATO allies. But I appreciate the call. Robert in Delaware, 1-800-520-1234. What do you say, Robert?
Yeah, Hugh, I guess my concern is, can we get to this sort of a Yalta moment about what's going to go on in Russia with some people behind the scenes who are going to cut the legs out from underneath Putin? Because, you know, before we have World War III, what's going to happen first?
Well, you're right to be worried about that. I want to draw your attention to a Robin Dixon story in yesterday's Washington Post. Putin, czar with no empire, needs military victory for his own survival. And I am worried about escalation because I think Putin is nuts. And I do worry about that. But I think the likeliest way to deter him from ever using his nukes or anything to end up with World War III is to fight him on the front line in the Donbass. Their military is getting eviscerated and maybe even decimated. And I mean, the old Latin sense, 1 out of 10 Russian soldiers dead. The body count is extraordinary. Their losses are so savage and huge because they're just throwing conscripts and prisoners into the front lines where it didn't work. They didn't train their people. Their military is being shut back, but he still has a nuclear weapon. You're right to worry about it, Robert. You're right to worry about it. But the best way to keep Putin in check is to beat him in Ukraine. Thank you, Robert. Randy in Tennessee. Good morning, Randy. Which part of Tennessee? Are you in Knoxville?
I'm in Knoxville. I'm actually in a bedroom community, Corryton, Tennessee, and that's the home of PFC Knoss, who was killed in the withdrawal, one of the 13.
I'm sorry to hear that.
His high school. They've renamed Tazewell Pike the Ryan Knoss Memorial Highway.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. You heard the Gold Star Father earlier. Maybe you heard them call in on this president, reminding us of the 13 Americans at the very end. I mean, we've more than 7,000 Americans died in Iraq and Afghanistan, tens of thousands wounded. That's why we do the Semper Fi Fund show every Memorial Day and every Veterans Day to take care of the troops who got injured in the long wars. But what do you think about Ukraine, Randy?
I am very worried about poking Russia in the eye and seeing that maybe somebody like Putin could do something horrible to us for engaging in a proxy war with the Russians. I don't know, Hugh. You know, I'm a conservative Republican because Republican Party is the home of conservatism. I'm a little R with a big C. Man, 22 years of nonstop war. You just said all those poor our troops that got killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and with no disrespect, because God love them, and I sure do, what did it get us? And what
it got us a lot in the Middle East, the Abraham Accords, a unified front against Iran, and a long-term deterrent there. We didn't. Oh yeah, we've got the Abraham Accords with the UAE and Bahrain and Morocco, and we will soon have Saudi in there aligned with Israel.
And now we have a puppet regime run by the Iranians, where all of our guys got killed. And
that is true. And I do believe the problem of Iran is a clarifying moment. Iran is, though, a country of wonderful people being ruled by a theocracy. And they killed our boys, and we killed Soleimani, and Trump had the right idea about bankrupting them. But we got to look at the world as it is, and we could have done things better. We don't, 2020 hindsight is perfect. But it doesn't mean we turn our eyes away from what's going on right now in the world.
We're asking for trouble, Hugh.
No, I'm not. I'm doing Ronald Reagan. You said
Russians, when we wake up one day and we've got an EMP or a nuke going off in New York City, nobody's going to be letting me paint their house because we want to get involved with a bunch of Ukrainians, the most corrupt country.
Okay, Randy, you're going off target here. I am with you. I do not want any American troops killed in Ukraine. The best way to secure America is if you are a small R, large C, go with the Reagan doctrine, peace through strength, and do what Reagan did. Never engage Russia directly. Do it through proxies and do it through weaponry. And this is Reagan 2.0 policy, poorly executed by Biden and Blinken, but nevertheless, it's still the same policy. Thank you, Randy. Alan in Ohio. Go ahead, Alan.
Good morning. Happy President's Day to you.
And to you, sir.
There's a question for you and the large number of people. Are you ready to go and meet the Russians head on? Because that's what we're doing.
No. We don't want a war with Russia.
We are doing this as a proxy. This is the same way when we went in and sent the little green men, as JFK said, into South Vietnam. This is going to be
No, it's not. We are doing what Reagan did.
Went into Kandahar.
Yeah, but Alan, stay with me through the break, so you don't have to rush. This is not the little green men, because we are not sending American troops to Ukraine.
Okay.
So your premise is wrong, right?
No, I don't believe so. You're going to send fighters into Ukraine. You're going to send F-16.
I would sell them or give them F-16, not American pilots. We do not get engaged in a war with a superpower. Proxy wars is what the Russians did to us in Vietnam, is exactly what we're doing to them in Ukraine. Give them the tools, they'll finish the job. Just like we fell in Vietnam, Putin will fall, I think, over Ukraine. But not if we abandon the Reagan peace through strength doctrine. Don't thank you so much, Alan. Don't go anywhere, America. More of your phone calls. President Biden is in Ukraine. If you're just waking up on a holiday, President Biden is in Kyiv. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. President Biden is in Kyiv with President Zelensky, and I am in the West Coast studio. And Selena Zito is in Yinzerland in Pittsburgh. She's been writing up a storm on Nikki Haley, on Ron DeSantis, for the Washington Examiner, for the New York Post, for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Selena, great story on Ron DeSantis. How long did you spend with the governor?
I spent an hour and a half. No, 1 hour and 41 minutes with the governor.
Those are two great columns. There's got to be more, right?
There is one more that's coming that will be in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette next Sunday.
Well, how did that come about? Because I'm envious.
I've asked everyone that is running. In fact, I'm not actually in Yinzerland. I'm on my way to someone who I can't say, but is going to announce tomorrow. So I'm on the way to do that interview.
Going to Indiana, are you?
I did not say Indiana.
No, you didn't, but I know where you can drive to in a day and who might be running, but we will see. Selena, on this President's Day, President Biden's best moment of his presidency, going to Kyiv, doesn't require a speech. He put out a strong statement. What do you think of this?
As someone who has spent the past four days in East Palestine, I'm going to think that there's going to be a lot of people that's going to quibble with his decision to go there. And I understand all the reasons why he did, but there are people that are hurting really bad in Columbiana County in Ohio that are going to wake up this morning and just be so, I'm not even sure what the adjective is. I think it's brokenhearted, hurt, angry, that he made the decision to go there, and they have been waiting for someone, anyone with authority and gravitas, to show up and tell them, we care, we hear you, we're not going.
I do believe you're honest. East Palestine, as Selena and I have talked about, is about 30 minutes from her and 30 minutes from my hometown, and I've been there many, many times. Jim Strzok, former California EPA administrator, former head of enforcement under H.W. Bush at EPA, wrote on his Substack yesterday about the complete travesty that is the East Palestine train wreck. And Selena, I would be afraid. And of course, the trial lawyers are there now and they're going to sue everybody. But it's shameful that Pete Buttigieg is not there and hasn't been there.
It is so shameful. It reminds me, and I'm old enough to remember this, of Black Monday in Youngstown in this way. At that time, the local church groups and the local unions organized several buses to go down to talk to President Jimmy Carter. And you know, this is someone they supported. Senator John Glenn was with them.
We got to tell people what Black Monday is in Campbell and the steel. What tell them about Black Monday, Selena.
Black Monday was September 19th, 1977. It is the day that changed steel industry forever up and down the Steel Valley, Mahoning Valley. Between 10 to 15,000 people all lost their job in one day.
Yep.
And these people traveled down to D.C. Carter knew they were coming. John Glenn had given him the forewarning. It was not a hostile crowd, and he refused to meet with them.
And President's Day, the idea that no one has been to East Palestine, and I don't know what to make of the American Chernobyl. I don't think it's that. But
no,
are people afraid of it?
Here's what they're afraid of, is that 1 year from today, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, there's a ton of attention there now. What will happen in those days? But this is an idyllic community. This isn't like Youngstown. This isn't like East Liverpool. The towns here are tidy and neat. There has been no sense of being stuck here because there's opportunity here. And there are no abandoned homes or abandoned industries. And they are fearful that once all this attention is gone and once all these experts, as you said, American Chernobyl, have gone and this attention is gone, that's when the real problem hits, no one is going to be there.
And no one will have been there. It's a massive leadership failure, but Pete Buttigieg does not realize his presidency is sinking. His future presidential bid is sinking as we speak.
Well, as a mayor, as a former mayor, he should be one of the first people to understand get there yesterday.
Zito Selena on Twitter. Zito Selena on Twitter. And if you're not on Twitter, get there. It's for news. And you follow Selena by going to @ZitoSelena. You follow me by going to Hugh Hewitt and coming back next hour. Thank you, Selena. Happy President's Day. Hour number two, straight ahead, America. Stay tuned. Your phone calls, 1-800-520-1234. President Biden is in Ukraine. What do you think? 1-800-520-1234. Connection to me, Hugh Hewitt, on this, The Hugh Hewitt Show. Churches need to stand up for the unborn and fight the powers of darkness. Find out how you can join the battle by reading the book, Letter to the American Church, new from Regnery Publishing. Friends, 2022 is history, but have you thought about what you will do in 2023? What will you do to make yourself better than last year? I have a challenge for you. Resolve to become a better educated citizen. Look, every year is a new opportunity, so I have a great way for you to make the most of this one. Our good friends at Hillsdale College have made their online courses free. They're all amazing, and they're free to all who wish to learn. My challenge to you, take just one. You can discover the beauty of the Bible in the Genesis story, study the writings of C.S. Lewis, or explore the true meaning of America in Constitution 101. There are many more to choose from, and these are all self-paced, free courses featuring Hillsdale faculty and scholars. So visit hughforhillsdale.com, that's H-U-G-H-F-O-R-Hillsdale.com, and just pick one of the more than 30 free Hillsdale courses. I hope you accept my challenge. Pick whichever course you'd like and resolve to be a more educated American in 2023. Go to hughforhillsdale.com. Start your free course today. hughforhillsdale.com. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. 5 minutes ago, President Biden, according to the pool traveling with him, has departed Kyiv en route back to the United States. I'm joined by Josh Kroshauer of Axios. Good morning, Josh, on this President's Day. I think it's the best day of the presidency for Joe Biden. And certainly Ukrainians are cheering. What do you think?
Yeah, big moment for this White House. It may be one of the moments that we remember the Biden presidency, one of the highlights, him going into Kyiv, displaying a strong show of solidarity with the Ukrainian people, with Vladimir, with Zelensky. You know, I was struck, Hugh, that there wasn't a whole lot of analysis, commentary in the State of the Union that Biden gave about Ukraine, about foreign policy generally. And this was, I think, made up for that. I think he really offered a strong show of support at a very important time in this war.
I couldn't agree more. It's the best day of his presidency. And the impact on Ukrainians is what I'm trying to get people to understand who may not love Biden, and certainly a lot of my audience doesn't. But if you're in the middle of a war, I'm thinking of Churchill being visited by Harry Hopkins in 1940. And how that meant everything to Great Britain in the middle of the Battle of Britain, everything to have the United States on their side. And that's what's happening here.
Yeah, and we're at a pivotal moment in this, what seems like a long haul, a long stalemate. Russia's throwing all their manpower at this eastern line and doesn't seem to be getting far, but there's a lot of casualties and a lot at stake in the coming months, and morale means everything. Certainly the money and the manpower and the military equipment that the Americans and our allies have been sending Ukraine is important, but the morale is as well. And I think this was a important show of support at a crucial time in the war.
Now, let me state now the second part of the argument. It's always the same with this White House, 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. They do the best thing in the presidency, and they announce, by the way, we're sending $500 million more, and none of it is advanced weaponry. Don't worry, not advanced. It's like Jake Sullivan is walking back the impact of the president's trip, even as it's happening.
Yeah, I didn't see the latest statement by Jake Sullivan.
Well, I'm not sure it's Jake. It's a unnamed, but Jake is with him. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, is with him, so I assume it's him.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you see that there's a reticence from this White House. In fact, I was surprised that Biden, like I said, did not spend more time in his State of the Union talking about the high stakes in Ukraine winning the war against Russia. But look, there are political considerations. There are divisions within the Republican Party. There are divisions in the Democratic Party to a lesser extent about how much time, how much money, what types of weapons we should send. So they're very sensitive to the domestic politics. Usually they come around. Usually they've been, continuing to give the support that Ukraine needs, the weapons that they need. But sometimes it takes a little while, and sometimes they're trying to kind of cross their T's, dot their I's, and make sure they got the politics straight.
Yeah, the F-16s are the biggest example, or the MiG-21s. The stuff they've stopped, and then they grudgingly give. I just, maybe this will change it. You know, once you're in, you're all in, right? What happens if Ukraine collapses now? I mean, that they've got to understand that you can't lose after you've staked the presidency on it.
Well, and Hugh, there have been some signs, I would say elements within the administration that are a little cautious. There was a story in The Washington Post last week from a Biden official trying to, downplay expectations of more weapons, more money coming in the next year, and trying to figure out a resolution for some type of, endgame. You know, I don't think that's the majority sentiment within the administration, but there are voices that are more cautious, would like a settlement of some sort sooner rather than later. I think the majority of folks on the, you know, in the administration want Ukraine to win. Well, I want them to have successes on the battlefield. But, you know, there is a worry that this could go on and there could be a whole lot of issues to come.
I think it's 65-30, according to Gallup. 65% more aid, keep it up. 30% bring it to a halt immediately. And that 30%, I think, is distributed on the Bernie Sanders left and the Rand Paul right.
Yeah, well, I think a little more on the right. That's one of the bigger challenges, keeping the Republicans. I mean, I think Mitch McConnell, to a lesser extent, maybe a little bit McCarthy. I heard Mike McCall last week. Really, I think he's going to hold hearings, just underscoring the brutality of what Russia's been doing in this war. I think, you know, the old line Republicans are very much 100% behind the White House. And behind Ukraine more broadly, but you know there is more anti-war sort of isolationist sentiment right now on the right. It's about 50-50 when you look at the polling among the Republicans and independents and Democrats, very very much in favor of continuing to support Ukraine.
I haven't seen that number, but I'll be open to hearing it. I think Republicans will make a strategic error if they lurch isolationist. Reagan's peace through strength is the design. And I talked to Mike Pompeo about this a couple of weeks ago at the Nixon Library. It's not a new playbook. It's the old playbook. It's the playbook that brought down the Soviet Union and can, if used again, collapse the three-headed monster that is Iran, Russia, and, of course, Xi Jinping's CCP. Josh Crosshour on Twitter and at Axios. Thank you. Happy President's Day. Don't go anywhere, America. Coming right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Eric Metaxas's new book, Letter to the American Church, is a must-read wake-up call for American Christians on what needs to be done now and, in fact, needed to be done yesterday. Get Letter to the American Church. Morning glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. It's Hugh Hewitt on this President's Day 2023. And if you're just waking up, you set your alarm to me on the West Coast or in the Mountain West. President Biden went to Kyiv overnight. He's been in and has now left Kyiv, Ukraine's capital. He walked around with President Zelensky, promised $500 million more in aid, and then departed. This is the best moment of his presidency, in my view. I'm joined by Leland Vittert, anchor for News Nation. Good morning, Leland, on President's Day. I know what you'll be covering tonight.
Good morning, indeed. And I'm not sure anyone had a presidential visit to Kyiv on their bingo card, kind of like nobody had a Chinese spy balloon on their 2023 bingo card, but here we are.
Yeah, you know, James Homan, my colleague at The Post, just tweeted out, following months of meticulous planning, Biden huddled in the Oval Office on Friday with his closest aides for a go or no-go meeting on the trip to Kyiv. Unlike presidential trips to Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. has no military presence in Ukraine, making the trip riskier. I don't know if you've ever traveled on one of the surprise trips, Leland, have you?
I have not. I had a good friend who did and said it was one of the great moments of her life for obvious reasons. They basically take a very small group of the press corps a couple of hours before you assemble, typically at a garage somewhere not far from Andrews Air Force Base at a shopping mall. They take all your cell phones. They toss them in those RFID bags so you can't make any calls. You can't do anything. And they throw you on Air Force One and off you go.
And then you show up in Kyiv 12 hours later.
Or Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever else it is. So yeah, it's exciting. I think, you know, look, we had President Trump go to Iraq. We had also President Trump go to the DMZ when he met Kim Jong-un in other things and step over the DMZ, these kind of unannounced trips. I think you said it best when you said the highlight of his presidency, because this is President Biden sort of doing everything that has to be universally liked in America, of a president appearing presidential to support an ally. And he does it, you know, is seen with vigor and seen walking off Air Force One after a 10-hour flight that left at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is a good thing.
And taking a train from Poland, I am told. I haven't got the details on the itinerary yet, Leland Vittert. Let me ask you about, it just astonishes me that somebody in the entourage then put out a statement. The president announces $500 million more in aid. And somebody says, but don't worry, none of it is advanced weaponry. That means it's not F-16s and M1 Abrams tank and the stuff that they need. I'm not sure that that rules out HIMARS. It's almost like there are two presidencies at work here on Ukraine. Either you're with them or you're not.
I've heard that argument, and I make a point not to argue with people who are smarter than me, which includes you. That said, remember, every time that the Ukrainians ask for A, B, C, D, and E, we give them A and B, and we say C is possible, and D and E is not happening. And then about 2 months later, we give them D and E, and then we get, you know, the next five letters of request, and on and on and on. We're almost all the way through the alphabet here. I'm not sure that that's all that meaningful that we're not giving them F-16s. The flip side of that is, I think what is meaningful is that we haven't gotten to the point where we're giving them anything that appears to be offensive, in which case we're treating Ukraine a little bit like we treated Afghanistan, in that we're trying to turn this into Russia's Vietnam, into Putin's Vietnam, rather than to actually give them the weapons to just fully beat the Russians.
Yeah, we've got it. Thank you for the compliment. You're fully the equal of anyone in broadcast, including me. But Leland, my point, and you know, I'd ask everyone to think about this, is we don't want a Vietnam. I don't want 60,000 dead Russians. I want them to withdraw and leave Ukraine alone and rebuild Ukraine. But that ain't going to happen until they have another massive setback. I'm sure you read the Washington Post story on Putin in isolation, paranoid Putin. Now they've got people whispering at a bar that they're upset with Putin, and those people are getting arrested. It's like the return of Stalinism. And Iran, Russia, under the protection of China, it's just the new axis of evil, 2.0. I don't know why we are going to force the Ukrainians to take more casualties than they have to do just because we don't want to upset Russia with F-16s.
I couldn't argue with your logic there. I don't know if it's we just don't want to accept, you know, anger Russia. I think that there's sometimes tends to be a little bit more complicated and nuanced look at these things, and it would take a couple of years to give them F-16s and train them on it. To your point, though, no better time to plant an oak tree than today, other than 10 years ago. Where I thought you were going with this, and what I think is interesting, is presidential time then says everything. It's why we're talking about Ukraine this morning. If he had just landed in Poland for, you know, the one-year anniversary in the Munich Security Conference, nobody would have really cared. So the flip side of this is, on Wednesday, we're going to see a split screen, right, of President Biden overseas and President Trump in East Palestine. And I think the pivot to foreign policy is really interesting, because to a certain extent, George W. Bush was defined by foreign policy, but we really haven't had a president defined, and certainly a Democratic president defined by foreign policy and foreign policy decisions since Carter.
I did not know that President Trump was going to East Palestine. By the way, 5 stars for pronouncing it correctly. As a Buckeye who grew up 30 miles from there, I'm very glad someone pronounces East Palestine correctly from the Ohio point of view.
I had a question for that. Did they change it when Palestine became something?
No,
that always
no. Everything in Ohio has got, like, Vienna, Ohio. We all the literal people who settled Ohio when they set things up, they didn't know Palestine from Palestine, and they pronounced it that way. And the Ohio pronunciations often the Vienna is my favorite. Vienna, Ohio, home of the Vienna Mustangs, where my friend from high school, Tom Cornicelli, coached forever. That's my favorite. But there are lots of those funny Lima, right? Lima, Ohio. Everyone gets Lima, but you know, not many people know that. Leland, I got to ask you about Vivek Ramaswamy. What do you think of his toying with a presidential run?
Is he running for president or a Fox News contributorship?
No, he's president.
Really?
I think so.
Okay, well, I'd love to have him on the show. In fact, he has an open invitation. I don't know when the last time, I mean, I guess you could argue Trump, right? So do you argue that Vivek is going to follow the Trump playbook of becoming this outsider who is able to speak truth and develop this enormous brand? Is he going to beat Ron DeSantis at a primary among Republicans.
Well, you know, it presents an interesting dilemma to the RNC. You're going to have Vivek running, and you're going to have Larry Elder running on the West Coast, and they're both minorities, right? And do you keep them off the stage because they don't have a path to the presidency, or let them on and eat up time? I don't know the answer to that. Not my call, but it's an interesting dilemma for the RNC.
Is that presupposed that Nikki Haley does have a path to the presidency?
Yes, I think she does. I mean, she's won statewide. She's been the ambassador. She's well known. She'll pull in the single digits. It'll get her high enough. She'll get a number of individual. I don't know what their metrics are. I would use a black box, but if you have one statewide, I don't know how you can.
You'll have the potential of Tim Scott on the stage too.
Yes. Yes. I think both of them have a path to the presidency. That is, it's not easy, but it's not inconceivable. I don't know that Vivek's is inconceivable. I think Larry Elder's is. So I don't know what the rules are going to be. Leland, do you have a suggestion?
Lots, but I try not to make suggestions. I just try to report on those that do. It's way more fun to Monday Morning Quarterback, which is why I love journalism.
Yeah, that is, by the way, that's my approach to everything in the presidential campaign. I have no opinion on any of the candidates, but I'll tell you what they're up to. Leland, thank you so much for joining me. Be watching you on News Nation tonight. I appreciate your taking the time early on a President's Day holiday. Again, the people who came to work today, they're happy because in the news business, because the story of the year for Joe Biden, other than not shooting down the Chinese spy balloon.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.